The Cycling Podcast, in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
Where are we, Orla?
We are on the Fahrgasse of Innsbruck's old town at a place called the Culinarium.
It's beautiful. Beautiful old town in Innsbruck. We've been here how long? A few hours now. We arrived here, speaking on Wednesday, early evening. There's a nip in the air. It was very warm and pleasant earlier on, but I can sense it's going to be a cold one tonight.
It's still quite pleasant though. You've got your little cycling podcast jacket on, but I'm still in a little flimsy jumper. I've got my own central heating that I carry with me everywhere now, but I'm finding it really pleasant. It's lovely.
What are we here for?
Well, there's the question. We're here, unsurprisingly, for the World Cycling Championships. We've had a whole raft of time trials so far and building up to the road races at the weekend.
We arrived at the tail end of the time trialing, just in time for the road racing. So we got here just in time for the press conference after the men's time trial. We had a bit of a discussion, argument, debate about time trialing as we got off the plane, didn't we? About whether it was good or not. I can take it or leave it, really, time trialing. But you... You argued that you enjoy a time trial, especially if Bob Jungels is riding.
Yeah. Well, I like watching Bob Jungels. Who doesn't, really? Well, you know, I think time trialing gets a very bad rep, and I understand why, but I find it very, very pleasant and comforting to have one on the TV in the background and to just look up and watch it. I think it's very aesthetically pleasing, and I like the clinical way that you can follow it, you know, with the time splits and whatnot.
Well, you obviously haven't been watching the time trials from here then, have you?
Generally, I'm talking in an ideal world. And a team time trial, again, gets a bad rep, but I love watching a team time trial. I think it's a beauty to behold.
Agreed.
But I know I'm alone.
Well,
or nearly.
We'll start with that. We'll go through the time trials. Whatever you think of time trials, Rowan Dennis and Tom Dumoulin are both very interesting people and said one or two interesting things in the press conference. We're going to talk a little bit about the time trials in this first part. We're going to then hear from Daniel Freeb. I spoke to Daniel yesterday, looking ahead to the men's road race in particular on Sunday. And then in the final part, we're going to, we're heading off in a moment to the Yorkshire presentation of the World Championships in 2019.
Where we finally get the news as to what's happening with the team time trials after
we're going to record our third segment of the podcast after that. So you'll hear that. We've got a little interview as well of James Knox, the young British rider on Quickstep, who is riding the World Championships for Great Britain and in the strange position of having been a teammate and somebody who's helped Julian Alaphilippe to some of his wins this year, is now going to try and stop him winning on Sunday as he helps the Yates brothers. But we'll hear a little bit from him in part three. We'll talk about UCI reforms as well, because a bit of news on UCI reforms for World Tour, Men's World Tour and Women's World Tour as well in part three. Boring stuff in part three. No, it's not boring.
It's not.
It's important.
It's not, though. But it's good stuff. It's stuff
good
that
stuff
we've been waiting on as well.
We bumped into Ciro, didn't we? Ciro Scognamiglio at the press centre. He was skulking around, not staying in Innsbruck.
He doesn't skulk. He bounds.
He bounds. And he skulks a bit, but he's not staying in Innsbruck. He's staying with the Italian team, of course, in their hotel.
In Nibali's
room.
Asked
if he was sharing a room with Vincenzo yeah. Nibali. He's not. But before we go on with the time trial results, let me just mention an event that's coming up next Friday, the 5th of October, in London, in Wimbledon, Wimbledon Bookfest. We are doing an event at 8 p.m. on Friday, the 5th of October. We're sandwiched between Sebastian Falks and Graham Norton.
Lucky, lucky boys.
Holy Trinity there. Hope we do better than Movistar at the Tour de France. If you want tickets for that, it's www.wimbledonbookfest.org. Wimbledonbookfest.org. It's a really nice book festival. Lots of really good people, authors, and so on speaking. Oh, Orla, you ruined my punchline.
Oh, sorry.
And we're really looking forward to that. It'll be myself, Orla, and Lionel Burney making a return to public life.
Hopefully.
After his recent tumultuous events in his life, he's had a baby daughter. Send all our best wishes to Lionel.
And to Aoife, his little girl, Aoife, lovely.
The name a mystery.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, all our best wishes to,
and of course, his
Mr. and Mrs.
wonderful
Napalm
partner.
And baby Napalm.
Napalmette.
Anyway, the time trials order. Let's just run through the results quickly. I mean, we had a little bit in Cycling Podcast Feminine about the women's team time trial. It was won by Canyon SRAM. A bit of a surprise, but a really great team performance. They finished with all six riders. Mm. And the very sort of embodiment of what a perfect team time trial is, you know, where the sum is greater than the parts. And we saw, you know, a couple of days later, because the women only had 48 hours to recover from that before the elite time trial, the individual time trial, and it was quite amazing to see Annemiek van Vleuten win that and catch Trixie Warwick for some significant amount of time, who'd been part of the Canyon SRAM team, of course, Trixie Warwick.
Winning her fifth World Championship team time trial.
We also had the men's team time trial. Quickstep Floors took that ahead of Team Sunweb, who are defending champions, and BMC in third, Team Sky fourth, Michelin Scott fifth. We then moved on to the, well, let's deal with the women's time trial. Annemiek van Vleuten, she was the winner for the second year. A really commanding performance. It looked at one stage like it was going to be an annihilation. In the end, she beat Anna van der Breggen by 28.99 seconds, with Ellen van Dijk third, to complete a clean sweep of the podium for the Dutch, something that Orla predicted. And in the correct order in the Cycling Podcast Femina. Well,
I need to put money in these things.
Well done, Orla. Yeah. But Annemiek van Vleuten, what can you say? Extraordinary. Extraordinary, extraordinary season. And extraordinary how she's stepped up just the last year. She's 35 now. Mm. And she has become the dominant force in women's cycling.
Really in the last 2 years. Yeah. It's remarkable.
Since Rio. Since that terrible crash in Rio. And she is one of the favourites going to the road race on Sunday. A notable win and performance in the men's junior time trial from Remco Evenepoel, a young Belgian rider who everybody has been talking about. He signed already for Quickstep, and he won that. I mean, it was a short race. 33 minutes was the winning time, 33 minutes, 15 seconds, and he won it by 1 minute 23 ahead of Lucas Plapp from Australia, with Andrea Piccolo from Italy in third. The women's junior time trial was won by, help me out here, but it was another Dutch rider. You're a Dutch speaker,
Rose Marijn Ammerlaan.
She won it. Camilla Alessio was second from Italy. Eleanor Backstead, third from Great Britain. Magnus Backstead's daughter. Of course, we've had an interview with her on the Cycling Podcast Femina before. And then today, the men's individual time trial won by Rowan Dennis, with Tom Dumoulin second and Victor Campenaerts third. And finally, we've had the men's under-23 time trial, won by Mikael Bjerg from Denmark, with Brent Van Moor from Belgium second, and Matthias Norsgaard Jorgensen third. Ethan Hayter has been a stagiaire for Team Sky, was fifth there. So that's the time trialing done and dusted. And we arrived, as I said, just in time for the press conference from the men's time trial. Rowan Dennis was the winner. I mean, a really commanding victory, won by over a minute, a minute and 21 from Tom Dumoulin, which had a lot of people scratching their heads just at the margin of victory, when most people expected it to be a two-horse race, but they were surprised at just how dominant Rowan Dennis was. And I asked him in the press conference whether that was the best time trial he'd ever ridden, and he said no, it wasn't. In fact, his power numbers from the hour record were more impressive, and it was pretty much the sort of time trial he's been doing. You know, he won two time trials at the Vuelta. He's been pretty dominant in time trials. He just put together a solid ride, one that he expected to do today. And according to Tom Dumoulin, when he appeared in the press conference, which was a bit later, he said he had a really bad day, and that he knew from a kilometre, basically, that it wasn't his day.
Yeah, and you say everyone's scratching their heads with the margin, but Tom Dumoulin then was asked, you know, whether he was a little bit tired in hindsight coming into the Worlds off the back of, I mean, not strictly off the back of, but a season where he's had two podium places, second place at the Giro and at the Tour de France. And he said, yeah, it probably was. And he just said that for the entire time that he was out in the course, he just couldn't feel it, and that he was lucky he didn't have intermediate time splits, because otherwise he said he wouldn't have finished second. He was just trying to get through. But I love the rivalry between these two and the respect between these two. You know, we're looking at riders, 26, 27 they are, both of them, who hopefully have a long period of rivalry to come. And they were sort of talking that up, I thought, quite a bit in the press conference, and talking already ahead to time trials next year and looking ahead to Tokyo 2020 in the Olympic Games. Rowan Dennis says, you know, he's joining Byron Merida next year, next year. Oh, you're looking at me funny. I always get that wrong. Anyway, joining Barry and Merida next year, and he's had discussions already with Brent Copeland, their general manager, about his desire to juggle the Olympic ambitions in 2020 with any trade team obligations. But that is something, I think, between the two of them that hopefully we can see develop over the next couple of years. And not to disregard in any way Victor Campenaerts, who's had a wonderful season as well, European champion. I think he maybe talked himself down a little bit, actually, in the press conference. He said that the highest place he could have hoped for was bronze, and that it felt like he was... that it was a victory for him to just be in the podium with Dennis and Dumoulin. But it was a great ride from him as well.
Worth mentioning Michał Kwiatkowski as well, who was fourth and, you know, said that it was the best long time trial he'd ever done. And it was a long time trial, quite unusually long. I mean, over an hour is quite a long time for a time trial these days, especially with the Grand Tours, you know, chopping them down and them being ever shorter. Nelson Oliveira was fifth. Jonathan Castrovejo, the Spanish time trial champion, you know, sobering to see him being caught by Rowan Dennis, and he still finished sixth. Tony Martin seventh, but Castrovejo is another one who's had a very long season. You know, he was did a lot of work at the Tour de France for Team Sky, and then also rode the Vuelta too. So a lot of guys will be tired, but the margin of victory when you see Dennis catching other people who finished in the top 10 for 90 seconds. He was in a league of his own today, completely.
Absolutely, yeah, and delighted with it. He was grinning from ear to ear, as you'd imagine, coming in the rainbow jersey. So, yeah, a great victory from him, especially given his history at the World Championships with the individual time trial. A very popular winner, I think.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa, for their support and for producing some wonderful, well, my jacket, for example, that's keeping me nice and warm.
I'm gutted. I was going to pack mine, but it doesn't zip up over my belly
anymore. and also, it just about zips up over mine, but it's pretty close. But I was thinking, you know, Tom Dumoulin was looking incredibly lean tonight after riding two Grand Tours, whereas I tend to bulk up after three Grand Tours. Anyway, we'll work on that over the winter. They also produced Rafa. We're back to Rafa now.
Yes,
they produced these wonderful Pedaleuse de Charme t-shirts. I've come armed with a couple of them. We need to present Pedaleuse de Charme to Cecilia Utrecht Ludwig. We'll find another one over the weekend, present one to her. And we've got Pedaleuse de Charme for the men as well. So we'll maybe do a Twitter poll or something. Yeah. I don't know how we'll do that, but we'll do it. So thank you very much to them. So Orla, we'll hear from Daniel and get his thoughts in a moment on the men's road race in particular and the course, because he, you know, he's a man of the mountains. He knows the climbs here.
I'm not sure if he's a man of the Austrian mountains.
He knows all mountains.
He's just mountain man.
He is mountain man, yeah. he does actually know the Austrian mountains quite well, because as you'll hear in our conversation, there aren't a lot of major bike races that come here, and there are a lot of hidden gems, you know, and I think the road races this weekend will show some of them to the wider world. But Innsbruck, you know Innsbruck. You've been here before, I think.
I've been here once before, yes, in a cycling-related trip. I love it. Es ist sehr schön, oder? It's beautiful. Richard is conveniently sipping at his beer here, so we can't answer that
I'm
one.
I'm drinking my Austrian
Stein beer.
You
said it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world. And we've just flown in from London, and the air just feels so clear and so fresh. It's a very calm place so far. And I love this about the worlds as well, where you've got all the top names in the world, or almost all of them. It's got a lot of the feel of one of the big races, but it's just so understated. There isn't much of the usual big race paraphernalia or buzz, or it's just all happening sort of very serenely and gently in the background. I think it's lovely.
Yeah, it's a lovely town. It's a lovely holiday. We're in the old town here, and it's nice. There's a bike displayed over there, or someone's maybe just left it hanging there. I'm not sure. Is that a display, or has somebody left their bike
hanging
there?
That might just be where they're storing it.
And I like to think it's a display.
Yeah.
And it feels like a nice size of town, where, you know, the World Championship, it can accommodate the World Championships, but it's not...
not swallowed.
It's not overwhelmed. Yeah. Neither is overwhelmed by the other. Mm. They're perfectly compatible. And so I'm looking forward to a good few days here. And we are going to be, obviously, paying a lot of attention to the road races over the next few days. We've got a few interviews lined up. We'll be doing our cycling podcast, Femina, looking at mainly at the women's road race on Saturday. And the regular podcast next week will have news and interviews and so on from the women's road race and from the men's road race. So we're looking forward to a few action-packed days. We actually met someone on our way into the press centre, didn't we, Orla, who should prove to be a very interesting interview, but we can't reveal any more about that at the moment.
It should be an absolutely fascinating interview. You spotted him, and I went over and got his number. And
I pushed
we're going
you
to
forward.
Go on. You hid behind my increasing bulk, and I went and got his phone number.
You're
and we're
foil.
Going to go and you're going to go and visit him at his hotel in the next couple of days. I think it should be a really interesting chat.
Okay, well,
tease alert.
They follow a couple of commercial messages, and then we'll hear from Daniel Freib.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
How would you like a free case of craft beer?
You're asking the wrong person, Richard. I don't drink and I'm pregnant, but I have smelt your lovely beers at the Tour de France.
We had a crater, didn't we?
You did, yeah.
Of Beer 52 beer.
And as a listener,
as a listener to our show, we'd like to thank you for listening with the help of our friends at beer52.com. Just go to beer52.com/cycling to claim a free case. A little bit about Beer 52. It's the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club. Search out incredible and exclusive small batch craft beers from the world's greatest breweries and bring them back for their members. Every month focuses on a new country. And actually, I had the current offer. I'm actually a Beer 52 customer, so I will be getting this through the post. This month's focus is Oktoberfest. So you get 8 beers, you get the magazine Ferment and a free snack. You can read about the beers in the magazine, and you can get, as a listener to our show, your first case for free. Just paying £2.95 postage. This offer is available to listeners in the UK. And from that, you get your 8 incredible craft beers, Ferment magazine, and the snack delivered next day. There's no minimum commitment. You can just take the free case, try the beers, and see what you think. And if it's not for you, you can pause or cancel at any time. Beer 52 has a 5-star rating on Trustpilot, so it's easy to see that their members love the service. Just visit www.beer52.com/cycling to claim your free case today. That's beer52.com/cycling to claim your free case today. Our second episode sponsor this week is Harry's. Harry's Razors include everything that you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel and travel blade cover. It was a question this week of who would do the endorsement, me or Orla. How did we decide on that one, Orla?
On the Harry's Razor one?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not supposed to use them on my legs, am I?
No.
And my face...
Well, you look very smooth.
Doesn't require it, thank you very much.
More to the point, how is my face?
Very smooth, not as smooth as mine.
I had a Harry's razor
You're
shave
so
this
cheeky.
Morning.
You look very smooth, actually, very sharp. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very good razor. I've been using it for several months now while Harry's have been sponsoring the cycling podcast. Thank you very much indeed to them. Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. You support the cycling podcast if you take up this offer and get the trial set delivered to you. It includes the razor handle, the 5-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover. Go to harrys.com/cycling right now. That's harrys.com/cycling. Well, I've been joined by Daniel Freiba in an undisclosed location. Hello, Daniel.
It's not why it's not that secretive. Anyway, fine, Rich. Yeah. What about you? How's it going?
Okay, Daniel. I'm just talking to you on the eve of myself going out to Innsbruck. That's terrible grammar.
Yeah, horrific. You should work in a call centre.
But you're skipping the World Championships. Just downtime for you after the Vuelta.
Yeah, I would say so. Looking forward to particularly the road races at the weekend, though, Rich. Should be good. Great location. Slightly sad to be missing out on the Worlds in Innsbruck. It's a great city, big university city. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Are you familiar with the roads around there, the climbs around there? You did actually, because Austria is a funny country when it comes to cycling. You know, so central in terms of being right in the heart of Europe and Innsbruck being the capital of the Alps. But we don't see a lot of major bike races there, really. Obviously, the Tour of the Alps went there earlier this year. But it means there are a lot of climbs in Austria which probably deserve to have a much higher profile and status in the cycling world than they do.
Well, you're right, Rich. There are some fantastic climbs in Austria. Some of the highest and hardest climbs in Europe are in Austria. And the Austrians have traditionally built roads in a slightly different way from some other nations in Europe. The climbs tend to be steeper. There tend to be fewer hairpins on the big Austrian climbs compared to, for example, the Swiss ones. And the road tends to go pretty much straight up the hillside a lot of the time. And consequently...
Why is that? Why is that?
Well, it's a great question, Rich, and it's a subject that I would like to know more about. But unfortunately, in the course of researching my two books I write about mountain roads, it was a subject that I sort of skimmed and never really found the sort of literature I was looking for about it. But by all means, if anyone is listening and knows the go-to sort of Bible, the most authoritative tome on Austrian road building, please point me in that direction.
But in the meantime, I mean, what do you know about the circuit in Innsbruck and the climbs that the riders will be tackling?
Well, Rich, you know, we always have this conversation, don't we, every year about how difficult it is to analyse a world championship course because, you know, if you take a race like Liège-Bastogne-Liège, it's not so much the altitude gain or the distance that informs people's idea of how the race is going to pan out. It's the history of those courses. They know, you know, what a peloton does when it goes up La Redoute and so forth. And that's not the case with the World Championships. And consequently, you know, every sort of team recces the course months in advance, and then they show up in the week of the Worlds, and they still don't really know how things are going to pan out. I mean, if you look at purely the meters of climbing in this World Championship, I think it probably doesn't do the circuit justice. I think it's about 4,600 meters of climbing or altitude gain over the course of the, 260 kilometers, more or less, which is considerably less than worlds we've seen in the past. Well, some worlds we've seen in the past 40 or 50 years. I think the Nürburgring in Germany was the greatest ever amount of altitude gain. It was 5,000. It was high 5,000s, 5,600 or 5,800. But, you know, it doesn't really tell the whole story. A lot has to do with the way the climbing is distributed across the, you know, the various different climbs that are on the route. And in this case, we've got really... Well, one very difficult 3-kilometer climb to kick things off before the riders even get to the circuit. That's at the Gnadenwald. And then we have got these five circuits of, well, a long circuit where they go over the same climb once per lap, and it's the Eagles climb. And that's the long one. That's 5.7%. Gradient and 8 kilometers long, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's correct.
7.9 kilometers long and 5.7%. Yeah.
And thereafter, we've got the climb that everyone has really talked about, and there's been a lot of hype about, the Grammatboden, which is, you would think, where the decisive move will go. It's 2.8 kilometers long, so pretty short, but 11.4% average. And then there's a descent, a very technical descent by all accounts, and a short run into the finish. So the summit of that climb is 9 kilometers from the finish. So you would think that the guy who goes over, or the riders that go over that climb, if they've got a gap over the peloton, they would have a decent chance of winning. But yeah, if you're just looking at those, thinking about those stats, Rich, I was trying to, I was sort of racking my brains for climbs that we are familiar with in the sort of professional cycling panorama that might be good points of reference. And the long climb, so this is really going to be the centerpiece of the route, the Eagles climb. It's incredibly similar, certainly statistically, to the Heiskebel in San Sebastian. So the Heiskebel is 8 kilometers long at an average gradient of 5.6%, and the Eagles climb is, well, 8 kilometers at 5.7%. So as I said, almost identical. It's harder to find climbs that are similar to the Grammont-Boden.
The final climb at San Sebastian now, that final very steep climb, perhaps not too dissimilar, and a similar distance from the top to the finish.
That is true, actually. It's one that I hadn't thought of. Some more familiar ones that people might be tempted to compare it to, the Muro di Sormano, which has become very famous in the Tour of Lombardy of the last few years. That's shorter, 1.9 kilometres, so almost a kilometre shorter, but that's 15.8% average. That's steeper, shorter and steeper. One hill that did come across my radar, which it is fairly similar to, is the climb to Arate in the Basque Country, which is 3 kilometres long at 12.7%. And there's traditionally a summit finish there at the Tour of the Basque Country in April. And there, Rich, this year, the top five finishers were Enric Mas, Mikel Landa, Jon Izagirre, Dylan Teuns and Nairo Quintana. So, you know, that's a real climb for the specialists of the steep stuff. But, of course, there the finish is right on top of the climb. Here we've got a descent afterwards. And that was a 120-kilometre stage. On Sunday, we're going to have 260 kilometres. So, completely different. But that's just to, put a few, as I said, reference points in people's mind. And I suppose convey just how hard this circuit's going to be when you consider, as we said, they'll be doing the Eagles climb seven times in total, and then this leg breaker at the end.
Yeah, so who's going to win it? I mean, Thibaut Pinot drew a picture of a goat on Strava this week. Did you see that?
It was magnificent, wasn't it? It was magnificent. That was my highlight, not just of this cycling season, but any cycling season.
What message is he sending out to people by doing that? Because it was very well done. That took a bit of planning, didn't it?
I think it took his whole summer of planning. When he wasn't riding the Tour de France, I think he was... I've often wondered, I presume the way people do these, accomplish these great feats of Strava art is to plan a route, is to basically do it well in advance and then ride the route that they've sketched out in the shape of whatever they've sketched out.
It's
that right?
The kind of thing, I suspect, I've never done this myself, but I suspect it's the kind of plan that's hatched on a drunken evening, isn't it? with a few, maybe, I don't know, Pino at some point in the, maybe, it could be quite distant past. Pino's sat there with some friends, a few beers, and they've hatched this plan. What animal would you draw?
Well, maybe.
I imagine that's how it would start. What animal would you draw? And then go looking for the route. But it was, the detail was impressive, the legs and the horns and everything.
Well, maybe, Rich, as Thibaut Pinot, as we all know, is a very, very passionate lover of goats. Mm-hmm. It's some kind of mystical serendipity and pointing to the fact that he's going to win the World Championships. But is he going to win the World Championships? Because he's in... what's going to be, you would think, maybe competitive is the wrong word, French team, but a team where there are certainly several options. Romain Bardet is riding very well. He's been riding in Italy, a couple of the one-day races in Italy look pretty good. And I would say maybe the outstanding favourite is also a Frenchman, and that's Julian Alaphilippe.
Well, Alaphilippe,
certainly given the nature of that final climb, there are a few riders better than him in the world on short, sharp climbs. He won Flèche Wallonne, of course, earlier this year.
And San Sebastian, which we've just established is maybe the closest to this race.
Yeah, and when descending is also going to be a big factor. And as we saw at the Tour de France, and as Adam Yates learned his cost, Julian Alaphilippe is one of the best descenders in the peloton.
It's a pretty crowded French team. My question about Alaphilippe is, he's been in really great form for quite a long time now. To hold that from the Tour through San Sebastian, right up until the Worlds here, it looks like Bardet's maybe had a little break. Pinot had a break over the summer. I just wonder about Alaphilippe's ability. He won the Tour of Britain recently as well.
And the Tour of Slovakia.
His ability to maintain that sort of form all the way through, it's a big ask, I think, is it not?
In fact, Rich, I make it that he's won the last three races he has competed in, the Classica San Sebastian, Tour of Britain and the Tour of Slovakia.
Well, there you go. I mean, yeah, Bardet, I thought Bardet looked very impressive in those Italian races. But another rider who looked very impressive was Gianni Moscon, the bad boy. And I see that Vincenzo Nibali, who had been targeting the World Championships but didn't really show anything at the Vuelta to suggest that he would be competitive here, he said that Moscon is number one in the Italian team, and he does look in really good form. I suppose the question is whether a rider like him will be weeded out on that climb and on the, you know, the hilly nature of the course. Is it just a bit too much for him? I've heard a few people draw comparisons with the Olympic road race in Rio in 2016, where Peter Sagan sat it out thinking it would be too hilly for him, and then Greg Van Avermaet, of course, won it. And as you say, the difficulty, Daniel, is in not having any kind of blueprint, no history, no tradition, no sort of rules about who this course will suit and who it won't suit. And, you know, people are still talking about Sagan as potentially somebody who could be competitive, although again, at the Vuelta, didn't show any signs really that he would be. But Greg Van Avermaet, somebody like that, Dylan Teuns, you mentioned, he's a good climber as well. But, you know, could one of those guys come into the frame as well?
I would say Dylan Teuns has definitely got a chance. The others you mentioned, I'm not so convinced about. Neither Sagan nor Van Avermaet has got particularly, well, they've not been tearing up recently. And also, I think, you know, while there is a certain degree of confusion about what kind of race it's going to be, I think most of the national team managers, the guys who have seen the course a number of times and have also managed national teams at numerous world championships, are pretty confident they know what they're looking at here, and they know that it's a circuit for pure climbers. I mean, if you look at most of the teams that have been selected, there's sort of one domestique for the flat part of the course, the early part of the course, and pretty much everyone else is a climber. That's certainly the case of the French team. I mean, even the British team, which is severely weakened by Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome's absence, there's really only one rider, Ian Stannard, there who's been picked, you feel, to take care of business on the flat, and everyone else is a climber. So I would probably rule those two out, Rich. I mean, there are other aspects, there are other considerations beyond just purely the topographical nature of the course. For example, you know, the very difficult final climb, the nature of it could be slightly altered by where do they put the barriers on Sunday or for the road races, because we expect that to be the focal point as far as the spectators are concerned. Innsbruck's pretty much in the centre of Europe. There are going to be a lot of fans there from all over Europe. Is it going to be like an Alpe d'Huez type atmosphere where the crowd is getting very close to the riders? And that can also slightly alter, you know, where riders decide to go, how easy it is to follow a wheel or not. So, you know, it's one of the fascinating things about the World Championships. And of course, as well, the inter-nectime rivalries you can have in national teams. You know, they spend the other 51 weeks of the year riding for trade teams. The trade team is going to benefit if one of their riders wears the rainbow jersey. So does, for France, for example, does an AG2R rider help a Quick-Step rider? You know, these considerations shouldn't really come into play, but we've seen time and again they do.
So who's going to win? I mean, Valverde, is he going to have anything left after the Vuelta? My sort of tip, I think, is, well, one to look out for is Adam Yates. I just have a feeling that Adam Yates could be going into the World Championships in decent shape.
Yeah, I think the Yates brothers have both got a great chance. I think notably after the Vuelta, they were straight back on it again the next day or 2 days later. There was no sort of there was no letting their hair down after the Vuelta, Rich, as far as I'm aware. Not that they've both got very sensible haircuts, haven't they?
They also don't have a real reputation for letting their hair down, do they?
No. But you know, both good descenders, don't have that much experience of competing in one day races and really, you know, they haven't honed their ability to sort of outwit fellow, you know, big hitters in the same way that maybe Alaphilippe has. I think a rider who, you know, spends a large part of his season concentrating on one day races, which someone like Alaphilippe does, probably accumulates a bit more nous, a bit more experience, a bit more confidence maybe as well in a finale where, you know, on Sunday there's probably going to be a select group of 5 or 10 riders, and at some point someone is going to outthink the opposition as well as out overpower them. So you know, that would be a slight doubt. Teams, you know, the Great Britain team is not the strongest at this World Championships if you exclude the Yates brothers, but and certainly not the most experienced. It's quite a young team. Mm-hmm. But how important is that going to be on such a punishing course? We don't really know. Yeah, there are lots of other names we haven't even mentioned. Kwiatkowski didn't finish the Vuelta in particularly barnstorming form, but and has also been racing a lot since the summer, really, since the early summer. But he's a guy who you would never count out. And then you've got a team like the Dutch team, which has got a lot of strong riders, none of them really noted for their prowess in one-day races. So Kruiswijk, Dumoulin, Kelderman, but all very, very strong guys. And on a course where there is almost as much climbing as a sort of queen stage in a major tour, you would think those guys have a chance. And it's the same applies for the Colombians, of course. They've probably got the best climbing team in the race, but no one with a great record of winning one-day races. So I don't know who's going to win, Rich. I don't know. What does Napalm think?
Nobody knows what Napalm thinks at the moment. I think Napalm's not thinking a lot about Innsbruck at the moment. But who was the last male rider to win the Rainbow Jersey World Champion before Peter Sagan?
It was Rui Costa.
Incorrect.
Was it? No?
Michał Kwiatkowski.
Correct. Also with an attack. Who was it? Was it the attack actually on the climb? But it was largely thanks to his descending prowess.
Yeah, it was.
Was it not?
It was. It was one of the, and again, you know, if it's a group that manages to survive intact up that climb, that could be what happens. We just don't know. This is entering the realms of speculation.
I think one other very interesting aspect to this, Rich, is that the nature of the course and the fact that it is such a difficult course is it has inclined most of the main team managers and made most of the main team managers pick a team with multiple options, with multiple leaders. And, you know, that can lead to some really interesting scenarios. You know, if a Pinot goes off down the road with Kwiatkowski or one of the Yates brothers, you know, it's going to be a lot of sort of deliberation in team cars about, you know, who's got the best chance of sticking with who if they do go to that final climb together. And you know, these, no one is really talking about the sort of 10 kilometers of valley road between, it's pretty much 10 kilometers all the time, or slightly less, 8 kilometers between the climbs. But as we've seen before, often the key action can happen in those parts of a course when, you know, you think the race has really calmed down and there's a bit of a lull in proceedings.
Okay, finally then, Daniel, a favorite and an outsider, please.
Outsider, Sergio Henao. Mm-hmm. Quite an underrated one-day racer. And a favourite, I'm going to say, I would say Bardet, but I don't think he's really got, he has to go to the finish on his own. I'm going to say Pino. Why not? I'm going to say it's going to be a glorious day for mountain goats and exponents of Strava art.
Okay, my favourite, I'll go favourite, Julian Alaphilippe. Outsider, Michael Woods.
Good shout. I think, how do you think Woods will play it? Do you think he will ride, he will try to compete with the best guys a la Pedal? Or I do expect a fairly significant and a fairly dangerous break to go at some point. I expect Bauke Mollema to be in a break at some point. And it wouldn't surprise me if there are some fairly nervous moments for the guys, for the sort of the biggest hitters.
Well, absolutely, because there's that question of who chases the break. You know, there's no, You know, there's no quick step there. There's no established pecking order among countries. So who chases it down? You know, who's got the riders to chase it down? It'll be interesting. I think I met Michael Woods in Girona the day after the Vuelta finished, or actually the Tuesday. So he was out for a bike ride with his father, and he was talking about the World Championships and really looking forward to it. He felt like he was in the second tier of, you know, of fancied riders, if you like. Certainly not a favourite, but somebody who, as we saw at the Vuelta, really likes these very steep climbs and could certainly be in contention still at the top of that. Again, there's a question mark over his descending, perhaps, but a rider to look out for, perhaps, as well. And there's never been a Canadian World Road Race Champion, as he said. Steve Bauer went very close, controversially, in 1988, that was, wasn't it? But, yeah, so look out for him. I'll leave you now, Daniel. I'll let you get on with your business in an undisclosed location.
So you're off, Rich, to Austria. Yeah.
We're off to Austria.
Besides the cycling, anything you're looking forward to? Anything you're going to visit in Innsbruck?
God, you're really putting me on the spot there.
Nothing.
I don't really know Austria very well. I've been to Vienna for a holiday, but I don't know. I've never been to Innsbruck, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. I watched the team time trial the weekend. I thought it looked great, and the crowds were excellent as well. So, yeah, and it's going to be quite warm.
You need to try out. You need to take a look at the Nordkette mountain experience.
Okay.
So it's the way you can get a lift from the centre of Innsbruck,
mm-hmm.
and it takes you high up into the mountains, and you get a fantastic view of the Nordkette.
What should I eat and drink? Some schnitzel?
Mountain range. Innsbruck I don't know, there's probably something slightly more specific than that, but anywhere in Austria you get good schnitzel. You know, it'd be Wiener schnitzel, it'd be Vienna schnitzel, but I'm sure you'd be able to get some of that there. Some Tyrolese cooking, some Spätzle probably, which, you know, cheese, sort of little cheese dumplings.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Great. Well, on that note,
you'll be fine.
Thank you, Daniel.
All right, Rich.
Have a good
Have
one.
Good time.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport. Fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. Reminder that for the rest of September, there's still a few days left. You can get up to 50% off at scienceinsport.com and a further £5 off with the code CHAMPIONS. CHAMPIONS. The 25% off code also works for any non-discounted products. That's SISCP25. And we're very grateful to Science and Sport for their continued support of the Cycling Podcast. We heard before the interval there from Television's Daniel Free, but I'm back with Television's Orla Shinawi. I mean, mixing such
crossing
glamorous,
the media.
Glamorous circles these days.
And
I hope some of it rubs off, you know. But Daniel was looking ahead to the men's road race on Sunday. We'll do that a little bit, Orla. We've got a bit to talk about. Yorkshire announced their routes for the 2019 mm-hmm. World Championships last night. We went along to that. We've just watched the junior women's road race as well. We'll save that for the Cycling Podcast Femina. Speaking of the men's road race on Sunday, I spoke recently to James Knox, a young rider, British rider on Quickstep. He's had a very, very good first season, and he lines up for Great Britain on Sunday, where of course he'll be trying to help one of the Yates brothers try to win the men's road race. So here's what James Knox had to say recently about his first season with Quickstep and the opportunities he's had, and about Sunday. Yeah, I mean, James, you must be really pleased with how your first season's gone.
I mean, I've certainly enjoyed it as much as I could have imagined, really. I didn't really have any major ambitions, so I guess having a lack of results hasn't really been an issue this year, because everything else has been so much more important, just integrating in the team, getting used to the new level of races, and just chipping in where I've been asked to, basically. So yeah, from that side of things, it's been great.
You've been very visible, though. I mean, in a team like Quickstep, you know, which goes into every race pretty much with a plan for how to win, I guess you would, in that situation, accept that you're going to have a job to do for the team rather than, you know, maybe try and get a result for yourself.
Yeah, but I think I've enjoyed that. You know, it's the first time ever in my career, really, we've been going into every race with a plan to win, and that is, you know, literally every single race, basically. And it gives you a lot of direction, gives you a lot of motivation, and you feel like you got to, you know, you do your job to like 100%, and that gives you a little bit extra. And then even on those rare moments this year where I've been given a chance to play my own cards, I've been extremely motivated to do everything I can to try and demonstrate what I've got as well.
It was a very strong ride you did in San Sebastian. Is that one that stands out for you?
Yeah, I'd say so far this year there's been just a handful of moments. There's been San Sebastian, Montreal, Wallonie, and Tour of Fjords, where basically I've had just a slight opportunity to have a bit of a free rein. I mean, San Sebastian, again, was actually just all in for Julian. I was trying to stay around him into the finish. We came into last climb, and actually I couldn't stay with him. I got distance and then basically just found myself in a group that wasn't too far back and sprinting for about 15th position, I think. So actually very, very good result for myself and something I was really happy with.
What was it like coming into this team? I mean, they've had an amazing season, but regardless, you know, when you got together with them, when you met them for the first time at training camp, and you look around and you see, I know you spoke in an interview before about sharing a room with Philippe Gilbert and, you know, other guys who have won some of the biggest races in the world. Were you daunted by that, or did you take to that quite easily?
I guess at the start, certainly it was like, what's the word? It was pretty nerve-wracking. You know, these are guys that I'd spent only seen them on the TV, only sort of looked up to them as cyclists. But then I think immediately when you get to them as people, you see there's nothing different there. They are just guys who are exceptional cyclists, but normal people. And so it quickly fades away, and it just becomes normal very, very soon.
And winning, does that become normal as well? Because I think it's 67 wins or something now for Quickstep this year. It's incredible. It's one of the most successful teams in the history of cycling, really.
I mean, it's getting more normal. I'm not the one winning every week, so I guess I don't feel like an expectation to win. It's amazing to be part of the winning team so often, and that mentality of going for victory is cool, and it's very special to be part of. And as a fan of cycling, it's been... been weird to think, you know, what a team I've been a part of this year. Like you say, you know, it's pretty exceptional.
Can you talk about, you know, joining the team and knowing the sort of rider you are, the build you are, the type of rider you might like to become, and whether you've had any reservations about that at all going into a team like Quickstep, which had such a focus on the Cobble Classics in particular?
Well, obviously I'm pretty small and I'm light, and so those characteristics as a person lend me to sort of going well on the climbs more than ever in a sprint or a time trial of the classics. So I mean, that's always been something I've enjoyed doing as well, because I've excelled at it. I guess growing up watching cycling over the last 10 years or so, riders like Contador, Joaquin Rodriguez, have been the exciting sort of pure climbers I've enjoyed watching. And then more recently, they used to race against my brother, so I guess there's a nice relation there, and seeing them develop so nicely through their pro careers. The Yateses, they're like, you know, a massive inspiration as well, the sort of riders they are, where they've come from and how they've done it. You know, it's how I sort of like to see myself progressing as well. But Quickstep as a team, you know, I was not ever really daunted about the fact that they were, you know, a Belgian team specializing in classics at the time. I don't think it personally affected my career. You know, it gave me more opportunities perhaps to ride mountainous races. You know, I got to ride the Dauphiné this year, I got to ride Basque Country, Catalonia. These are races that if you're in like general classification teams, Movistar, Sky, it's such a competition to get in the team, I might not get those opportunities. There's so many ways of looking at it, but really I think Quickstep has given me a perfect place to develop, perfect place to grow. I've had great opportunities, I've so many so many riders I can learn from as well. So in many ways I think it's been perfect, this, you know, this first like Neo Pro contract.
And you've got the Worlds coming up, and Britain will be going into that race with two of the favourites, I would think, Adam and Simon Yates. Maybe Adam, you know, might even be the favourite, because Simon, I'm sure, has gone very deep at the Vuelta. Do you have any idea yet what the plan will be there, and how do you look forward to that?
I don't think you even have to really have a big discussion. We haven't had a big team discussion, but it's pretty clear what our plan is going to be. We've got Adam and Simon. We've seen how good Simon is, but like you said, and I agree, I think Adam could potentially come out of the Vuelta even better just because of the weights he's ridden the race. And they're both pure climbers, you know, they don't want to be in a group at the finish with Alaphilippe and Valverde, so it's going to be pretty simple, isn't it? We want a hard race, and it's a hard course, and it's theoretically it's perfect for them as long as they've got the legs on the day.
Odd, isn't it, that you go from riding with Alaphilippe all year to, it's just an odd thing about the World Championships where, you know, a guy you're a teammate with 364 yeah. days of the year, suddenly you're going to be riding to prevent him winning.
Yeah, I know, I've not really thought of it in that way, to be honest. I mean, I've never done a senior world champs before, so I presume everyone just understands how it is, but I'm riding for Great Britain, and the ambition is to win with Great Britain.
So that was James Knox, obviously a great prospect for the future climber and somebody who should have an important role to play on Sunday. And tipping there, Adam Yates for the title, or you know, maybe having the best chance of the British riders. Orla, we heard my favourite and my outsider, and Daniels. What are you thinking for Sunday?
I came into this thinking maybe A. Yates.
A Yates. Adam Yates.
Yeah, I mean Adam. Well, yeah. A full stop Yates. Yeah. I think Adam Yates is probably, by the sounds of it, in good form. It sounds like he feels like it's a race that he can go for, and he's got the form for it and all the rest of it. I mean, we were chatting just a moment ago at the Team GB bus, and they were pointing out how Matt Brammier, of course, is the head coach for the first time of the men's team, and I think he's maybe a bit nervous about that. I don't think that will make any difference whatsoever to how they get on. But I think if I were to put money on it, and maybe I should because I got the 1-2-3 in the women's individual time trial, and Ruhan Dennis is my pick in the men's, but none of those are particularly surprising. But if I were to put money on it, I'd maybe say Adam Yates. However, as other options, because I like to keep my options open, Mikhail Kwiatkowski, I think, could be in with a decent outside chance. He finished fourth in the individual time trial, so he's clearly in good form. And I think he could be in with a shout of getting the World Champions jersey again. And a lot of people have been chatting up about Gianni Moscon.
A lot of smart money on Gianni Moscon.
Yeah, including Vincenzo Nibali. He has said that he reckons Moscon will be the rider on their team. So Moscon could be a pick as well.
Well,
they're
he's
my three.
Been in very good form, hasn't he? Since he came back to racing after his suspension ended after the Tour de France.
It'd be maybe not unusual, but I'm not sure he'd be universally as popular as Peter Sagan as a world champion. Is that unfair?
No, I don't think that's unfair. I think that's a fair comment.
Well, I'm trying to temper it, really. Yeah. But, yeah, that doesn't influence anything on the road, does it?
Not really. I mean, Lionel would hate this. You know, this is a lot of speculation. He would hate even more speculating about a race that's still a year away. and I kind of... We went to the presentation of the Yorkshire routes last night, and I suppose the headlines are that all the races start in different places in Yorkshire. Harrogate is the hub. You know, that's where the finishing circuit is for the road races. An interesting looking finishing circuit, 14 kilometres long. Certainly not as challenging on paper as this one here in Innsbruck. And so it looks like it might create quite an open race. You know, it's selective because of the distance and the accumulated distance and climbing, but there's nothing really, really severe. There isn't. I mean, you'd have to build a mountain, which I'm kind of surprised Guy Verity hasn't done that. But
he would if he could. I'm quite sure.
But you know, I'm reluctant to speculate, however, on a race that's a year away.
But it sounds like you're about to, though.
Who thinks going to win? No, but I don't want to do that. I mean, that's a waste of time. I mean, it's It looks good. I mean, Harrogate's a beautiful place. Obviously, hosted stage one finish from the 2014 Tour de France. It's going to be a great location for the World Championships. That's where it'll all congregate, I suppose.
And it could be a great race as well, in that, you know, it will be attritional.
Well, of course it could
it's be. Not. Well, yeah, but, well, yeah, any race could be.
It could be a terrible race.
It could be rubbish. But when we look at, for example, looking ahead to the women's race this week, a lot of the chat has been on the fact that they aren't including the final hell climb that the men have. But the flip side of that is that it would simply be too selective and that we wouldn't get a tough enough and an exciting enough finale to the women's race. And as it stands, I mean, how selective is the group going to be in the women's race? I think at least with the Yorkshire one, we're going to have many more people being able to find it out across the different categories. And that's got to be exciting for a week-long racing programme.
Bring it on in a year.
Well, the other big thing, obviously, was the Love Island time trial.
Yes. Team time trial.
Yeah, the team time trial, the mixed relay.
As exclusively revealed in the cycling podcast Femme Ménage during the women's tour, we talked about the rumours that they were going to introduce a mixed sex team time trial. The format was made clear last night. Three men, three women. The men go off first, then the women. And I thought David Lapartio actually explained quite well the rationale behind that. Three men, three women. It's the minimum number of people for a team time trial. But it means that more countries should be able to take part. The Dutch will obviously be heavily fancied. One interesting aspect of it is the men go off first and the women go off last. So it'll be the time will be taken on the second woman across the line. I think it'll be interesting. A lot will depend on just how much the teams, the countries buy into it and what sort of riders they put up for it. You know, will the likes of Tom Dumoulin be selected for the Dutch team? I think a lot of it, you know, the status of it, the kudos of winning it will depend on who rides it, you know, because without the top tier riders, it's going to be a bit meaningless.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I think it's exciting as a prospect. And I put it out on Twitter to see what the reaction was going to be. And I got, you know, mixed reaction, as you're always going to get. The initial thinking that we had whenever we heard about it was that it was going to be men and women riding in a team together, so in formation together. And my worry about that was that it might be a little bit gimmicky and did we need the men and the women to be on the same time trial team? Personally, I didn't think so, and I thought maybe opened the female riders to criticism maybe of, you know, it not being as cohesive as you would see if the sexes were separate. And then we thought it was going to be a men's time trial at one part of the day, the women's time trial at the other part of the day, and then both of the times taken together cumulatively. And I think this is a much better prospect, actually. And there is a lot of regret among many fans that the triad team time trial is going away. And I share that. But a lot of the comparisons that people are making are on the triad team time trial, and that's gone anyway. So, you know, do we replace it with something or do we not? And I think as a replacement, it has a potential to be really exciting, actually. And it does depend on how many countries are competitive. But as Lapartien said, to have three riders, I mean, two riders just isn't possible because it's not then a team time trial necessarily. It's a two up. Three riders does at least make it possible for more nations to get involved in it. The flip side of that is that how much of a team time trial is it with only three riders in formation on a fairly short lap, as it will be in Harrogate? But they're trialling it really for the Olympic Games. They want this to be an Olympic discipline, which will be on a longer course. So as a trial, I think bring it on. I'm quite excited about it, really. And I love the fact that the women will be taking to the road second. I mean, it's a small symbolic gesture maybe, but those things matter. So I think it's great. Bring it on.
Absolutely. We're saying bring it on a lot, aren't we?
I know, so I just, yeah.
What are we doing?
I mean, did you say it as well? I noticed I said it twice.
It's
I don't know. We're feeling energised.
But I think one thing about Yorkshire, the crowds will be fantastic. I mentioned David Lapartion. He was there last night. And he's been busy this week. Lots of political stuff happening this week. The UCI Congress on Friday. This afternoon, actually, is the vote for the new president of the CPA, Gianni Bugno, against David Miller. We heard in last week's podcast from David Miller and from Laura Mora from the CPA talking about the controversy that's raging, really, about the election process and about you know how riders actually have a say in electing the president of their own trade union, in effect. And it looks like a bit of a stitch-up. I mean, it looks like Bugno is going to win it. There seems to be a lot of anger about that. At the same time, the CPA are arguing, and you could argue with some justification, that the time to change the voting process is not in the couple of weeks before the election. And Bugno, who's very likely to be re-elected president today, has said that they will look at the system for electing the president after he's been re-elected. More or less. Anyway, I'm going to go on tonight. It should be great theatre. David Miller was there last night. He grabbed, not literally, but he collared, not literally, David Lapartio last night, and they had a very animated discussion for about 30 minutes. David Miller was making some points to him quite forcibly about, because the UCI give 100,000 euros a year to the CPA, so they endorse the CPA as the official riders' union. So I think there'll be some fireworks this afternoon. I'll go along and at least witness that. On the reforms announced this week, there has been another sort of a storm brewing with the UCI Lapartio threatening to cut World Tour teams from 18 to 15. That's been pushed back on by the World Tour teams themselves. The World Tour will remain at 18 teams. Teams will also be obliged to have between 27 and 30 riders, which is a relief to CPA, who saw a lot of riders losing their jobs. But, you know, some teams this year, Movistar, Sunweb, for example, had fewer than 27 teams. So that's quite an interesting move. But, you know, the World Tour will consist of around 185 days of racing. World Tour teams will be obliged to ride all of them. It's a hell of a lot, and it's a bit of a mess in my view. But anyway, they all seem quite happy with the compromise that's been reached. The Pro Continental tier, which is below World Tour, that's going to be renamed the UCI Pro Teams, and below that there'll be UCI Continental Teams. It's still a bit of a mess of Pro Conti division, because there are a lot of teams. There's going to be no limit on that, and they're all competing for, in effect, the same races. However, next, as of 2020, the UCI has said that the two best ranked UCI Pro Tour teams from the New Look Pro Series will have the right to participate in the Grand Tours. So there will be fewer wildcard invitations.
And more transparency,
a bit more transparency, a bit more, you know, we saw Aqua Blue Sport go to the wall recently, in part because they weren't happy at the system for gaining selection to Grand Tours in particular, but major events generally. This looks like, you know, if you are Pro Continental team, there's a clear pathway there to riding in the Grand Tours. You've just got to be one of the two best ranked teams from the New Look Pro Series. So that, I think, is a positive move. And on the women's side of the sport, the big headline there is that there's going to be a minimum wage for the top tier, the Women's World Tour teams, from 2020 onwards. We don't know what that minimum wage will be yet, but there looks like a restructuring as well, whereby the Women's World Tour, which has been running for a couple of years now, there will be recognised Women's World Tour teams. There haven't been up till now. They've just been teams that ride Women's World Tour events. So the status of UCI Women's World Tour teams will entitle teams to participate in UCI Women's World Tour events, said a recent UCI press release. And he says, reading off a
off the press
here.
Release. And I want to say, we will be talking about that in more detail in the Cycling Podcast Feminine, because they are overall positive headlines in terms of the minimum salary, which a lot of people have been campaigning for, and the more structured division of women's cycling, you know, the argument being that it leads to the professionalisation or encourages the professionalisation of the sport. I think there's more to unpick there. I'm not as overwhelmingly impressed. Not that I'm not impressed by it, that's maybe wrong, but the devil is in the detail, and I think it's easy to get headlines, but there's so much more that is nuanced in women's cycling that isn't necessarily addressed by those factors, and actually those headlines might divert from. But we'll get into that in the second podcast.
And there's
feminine.
A practical consideration of the minimum wage and what that will mean.
But
for
exactly,
teams
is it a living wage? There's no guarantee it's even going to be the same level as the Pro Conti minimum wage. So, and then the implications of teams having to pay their riders a minimum salary when they're trying to grow the teams themselves.
On the other reforms, it's a compromise really hammered out between the teams, between the CPA. Prudhomme was involved in these discussions, Christian Prudhomme, the director of the Tour de France, and obviously David Lapartio on the UCI. And it does seem to me that a couple of years ago, the World Tour calendar really expanded quite dramatically to include events, you know, like the Tour of California and so on. And it became quite bloated, but in consideration of that, World Tour teams were not obliged to ride all the World Tour events, and that will be the case. And it doesn't look like the calendar will be slimmed down or shrunk at all. So it's putting real huge demands on teams and riders, and I'm not sure that that's really sustainable or the way the sport should be going. It doesn't look to be, there doesn't look to be any effort to streamline it at all. Some people will say that the sport shouldn't be streamlining, it should be expanding, but I'm not sure.
Expansion for expansion's sake is never necessarily a good thing.
Yeah,
though.
I don't think more is necessarily more. Anyway, we'll have that discussion, I'm sure. Again, we're here for the racing, really, this week, although it is a week of politics as well. And I'd say I'm off to the CPA election this afternoon. But we should wrap things up for now. We've got the Junior Men's Road Race this afternoon. Orla, we've got some interviews to do as well. Under 23 races tomorrow, the Women's Road Race on Saturday and the Men's Road Race on Sunday. And we'll try and include a lot of that racing in next week's regular podcast, which should come out towards the start of the week, maybe Monday, if we can get our act together. But that's all for now. Let's go and enjoy the Innsbruck Mountain Air.
Let's do that.
You have been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Subscribe to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com to get all the latest news and special offers delivered straight to your inbox. This episode was edited and produced by Tom Wally.